Welcome back to Following Noah Donna, Stormlight Podcast. This week is our Wind and Truth preview number 5. We are in chapters 7, 8, and 9. David, how are you?
I'm doing very well. We got 3 chapters, so that's awesome.
Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Really excited to dive into this. There's a lot of good stuff here.
There is a lot of good stuff. Let's roll intro. And then I want to talk about something else before we even get to the chapters or the epigraphs. All right. As of recording this episode, we have the cover reveal of Wind and Truth is not even 12 hours old. Tim, did you see it?
I did. I didn't look that closely, though.
Okay. David, did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it. And I also saw there's 2 versions, one for the hardback and one for the audiobook.
Yes, I saw the audiobook. I saw the audiobook one probably 20 minutes after I saw the hardback version. And the audiobook one, I think, looks a lot better. Not that the hardback one looks bad by any means, but I thought the audiobook one had a nice square like crop to it, and it included more on like the left and right, so I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I think there's more to that painting to the left and right than what we've seen so far.
Do you think there's a character on the back on the further left, or do you think there's not room for that?
I don't know what they would spoil in a cover, but like, would it be Odium's champion?
Or maybe like Kaladin hovering to the left or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or the Stormfather, maybe.
Someone pointed out this looks like it's just after that piece of art we got a while ago with Dalinar going up the stairs carrying the book. Like, this looks like it's right after that. And right, there's this shadow cast over him in that piece of art. So someone's up there with him, I would think.
Right.
But we don't see that on the cover.
That other art piece that you're talking about is one of my... It's definitely my favorite official art piece that we've ever gotten. It's nearly my favorite Stormlight piece ever. Like, it's that picture of Dalinar ascending the stairs to the top of Urithira is incredible. Tim, is this your... Where does this rank for your covers?
That's an excellent question. I should have thought about this before, but I haven't really paid that much attention. I think the Yasta one is epic, but this one's cool with like all the different gems in the side. And I mean, it's book 5 and I'm really excited and I've been ready for this for years. So
I've always said that Oathbringer was my favorite, but I don't know if that's like really true. I just wanted to be different and not pick the other ones like everyone else does. I think Rhythm of War is actually my favorite. This one, it'll probably top that for me, just because I'm a big Dalinar fan. But what about you, David? Where do you rank it?
I think this one's my favorite. I think the composition as a whole is really neat, how it kind of, it's dark all around the outsides and it draws your eye to the light, the storm in the middle. And then Dalinar's even got, if you look closely, he's got rim lighting from that all around him. So he's kind of lit. He's backlit by it. Just really, really nice piece of art there. And then, of course, what it represents. I think like the Way of Kings cover is really cool, but it doesn't represent an event in the books. It was just sort of supposed to be draw 2 random shardbearers facing each other, because I think there wasn't really the concept of at that time of, hey, we should pick a scene from the book and draw art there. It's more just like abstract. I think my second favorite is actually Words of Radiance. I always get tongue-tied trying to think of Words of Radiance versus Rhythm of War, because in my head they're WOR and ROW, and I have to translate that and I have to remember which is which. Anyway, in Words of Radiance, like that cover with Kaladin landing, and it's just such a great scene. But it does have that one problem where he's not holding a shard spear, right? Because they didn't want to spoil that. But
right.
I think the composition on that one is really nice as well. For some reason, the Rhythm of War one never really spoke to me. Like, I don't really know what's going on with it. Like, I know it's Shallan and it's Shadesmar related, but like, or is it Urithiru related? I never really got it. And so, like, it never really stood out to me as like, oh, I like this one. And then Oathbringer, I actually find kind of bland looking. Like, it's very mono-colored with the tan wall behind her, and she doesn't contrast with it very well. Not a lot of lighting going on. So I never really, I mean, the scene it's depicting is epic, but I feel like, you know, imagine if the Oathbringer cover was like Dalinar uniting the realms. Like, that would be a huge spoiler, but that would be an epic scene to give there, right?
Right.
Or even something from Carbronth with all the crazy Spren flitting around, like the corrupted Spren or whatever they are. Like, or something with one of the unmade, like Dalinar trapping the thrill. Thank you. Like, I feel like there are, like, I don't know why they picked that scene with Yasna just kind of guarding the wall. But anyway,
looking at this, the Wind and Truth cover, does this, if you haven't read the Stormlight Archive, does this spoil anything?
I don't think so.
See why it would.
The only reason we know it's Dalinar is from context,
right?
Mm-hmm. Just some random dude with a book staring at a storm, like,
yeah,
in the mountains.
I do think that's interesting that they went with multiple mountains that are higher than Urithiru. Which I know it's described as like it's among the tallest peaks, so it's not the tallest thing around, but there, I mean, just looking at the art piece, there's, you know, mountains that are well higher than Dalinar is.
The other thing I really like about this cover is it's so dynamic. Like, you can see the motion even though it's a still image. Mm-hmm. Like, with his, he's reaching out and then he's got, so there's kind of a line going from his left foot to his right hand, kind of pushing out towards the storm. But then there's also kind of the counter line of his cloak trailing behind him. Just like, it's, and his foot is off the ground a little bit. Like, I just watched a TikTok video about this, so this isn't all my analysis, but I wish I remembered the name of the account to credit. Maybe I can give that after and we can make sure to credit that. But yeah, like, she did a really nice art analysis of this, and it's just such an amazing piece of work with the way the lighting works and the lines, the through lines and everything. Just really, really nice piece.
Yeah. All right. Tim, would you like to read our epigraphs for this week?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to. All right. Start here at chapter 7. However, the wind did not think like a person does. This should not surprise anyone who has familiarity with a Spren, though such things are less common now than they once were. And then chapter 8. Her memory was keen, but her interpretation and explanation of that memory could be fanciful. Those days, though, I believe she was deliberate, concerned, and focused. She did not see the future, but somehow she knew it anyway. And then chapter 9 to finish it out. All agree, the first key moment came when Kaladin Stormblessed listened. Though not an edge dancer, he did a fine impression of their oaths.
Okay. So, two things almost 100% confirmed. That this is written after the current chapters we're reading, and this is written not by Kaladin. Is there any further contention for that?
Kaladin loves talking about himself in the third person and calling himself Kaladin Stormblessed, so, you know.
He has a long history of that, yes.
Yeah. He's like a Pokemon. No,
yeah.
I think that it's not Kaladin. And there were some interesting theories from fans. I don't know if we're ready to go over that.
Yeah, but sure.
In terms, maybe we should talk about the content first, which is that I don't really see much content. Like, nothing here was like, ooh, like all the previous epigraphs, I was like, ooh, tasty. These ones, I'm just like, okay, I mean, but I don't know if anyone has other impressions, but
the only thing I really noticed was in the last one when they mentioned Kaladin Stormblessed by name, at like capitalized Stormblessed as a surname, which I know that in Rhythm of War and in the preview chapters we've already seen, they've referred to House Stormblessed and, you know, like Kaladin's house as Stormblessed, but now we know he goes down in history like that's his last name. No matter what it was before, if Lirin and Hasina had a last name, it's Kaladin doesn't have that anymore because that's what he's known as.
So am I remembering wrong that when he almost like basically told them, by the way, we're House Stormblessed now, like they basically inherited his house. I got the impression that Dark Eyes don't have house names. Don't have.
Yeah, I could see that. I can't think of a Dark Eyes that does have a last name.
Yeah. Except maybe from a different culture, but at least Alethi. The other thing I want to point out is he's not written as Kaladin Kolin.
True. True.
But we did just get something from Shallan. Well, I don't know how, when was this? When Shallan's talking about how she's Shallan Kolin, but she could choose not to take the Kolin name.
And yeah, that was
the Devar name.
That was last week. And Notum addresses her as Radiant Kolin. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she has this internal dialogue of she didn't necessarily need to take Kolin. Like in their culture, it was kind of a 50-50 shot of whichever house was more powerful, that's the name you took or whatever. But she did end up taking Kolin. So canonically, she is Shallan Kolin, which does not sound very good.
It really doesn't. It doesn't flow. But I almost got the impression that you can, like, either party can choose to change their name or not. So you could end up with a married couple with two different house names, was my mm-hmm. impression. But maybe that was more, I read more into it than what's actually on page.
No, I think you're right there. I think you got it exactly right. Like, they could choose whatever they want.
Yeah.
For whoever they wanted.
Which is actually true. At least I got married in California, and that's true in California. I think in some states, like when you get married, you can change your name to whatever you want. In California, they actually give you very explicit choices of, like, you can either party can take the other party's last name, or you can hyphenate them. And then you can also change your middle name, but only to your previous last name. Like, they have rules about it. And if you want to do something more creative, you have to go through this separate name change process. So I feel like it's almost similar to that.
So could you swap last names?
Yes. I think you could, under the rules, technically swap last names.
So that's for now. So in Colorado, it has the same rules. I took my wife's last name and then changed my previous last name to my middle name. So and they allowed that, but then I had to fill out a separate form to have two middle names. So legally I lost my previous middle name.
Wow. Yeah.
There you go.
Huh. All right. Getting into the content a little bit more here. I think Kaladin could have kept his own last name and still been, like, inherited the kingship, so to speak. I don't think there'd be a problem there.
I just think that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that if it said Kaladin Kolin, that would have just been like a blast. Like, wait, what?
for sure.
Yeah. But as it is, it's like we're keeping it ambiguous. But I just wanted to point out that it is Stormblessed and not Kolin.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If the book goes a certain way, it could end up with Kolin going back to like an Alethkar name and Stormblessed being like a Radiant Urethiru name. So there could be like a specific split there by the end of the book.
Yeah, it's a good point. I did find another thing interesting with the previews. Talk about Spren becoming less common. And then also where, like, the wind seeing the future. Curious what you guys think with all of that.
that line about though such things are less common now, I'm not sure what such things is referring to. It's a little confusing. The whole context is, however, the wind did not think like a person does. This should not surprise anyone who has familiarity with Spren, though such things are less common now than they once were. I think it's basically just saying most people aren't that familiar with Spren these days, at least the way Spren think, like probably talking about the sapient Spren.
Yeah.
Because there's not as much general interaction with the radiant Spren among the common person. Common people have all these different mythos and ideas about Spren, but they don't actually talk to them, right? So
yeah, though depending on how far in the future this is, could be concerning if sapient Spren are less common than they once were, say 10 years ago.
Yeah,
true.
Still holding out for Oradin as the author.
Yeah.
Well, because like if they succeed in like resurrecting all the Deadeye Spren, there should be more than ever.
Right.
But maybe it's still just the case that they're talking about the common person. Like the common person's just not interacting with Spren like they used to.
Hmm. Well, used to when?
No. Right. Like in previous Desolations? When the Radiants were still around as a thing?
Could be.
I'm speculating because it is very ambiguous.
Yeah.
I do like that the author writes down that the wind was... Hold on. The wind was known to be fanciful with its recountings. I thought that was kind of funny that the person, whoever's writing it down, was like, yeah, her memory was keen, but you know, her explanations could ramble or exaggerate a little bit. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Why does that remind me of Nightblood?
Yeah.
He remembers the sandwiches.
Yeah, we have Nightblood dialogue. When was the last time we had Nightblood dialogue? I mean, we have a little bit at the end of Rhythm of War, but really we haven't really had a conversation with Nightblood in a while.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
That was last set of chapters, right? I don't think Nightblood appeared in these ones.
No, he did.
They talk about snacks. They talk about cutting up snacks.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, probably not by name. I just searched Nightblood.
Tim, who do you think the author is of these epigraphs? I know we've gone back and forth, but...
Yeah. I was so convinced it was Kaladin that I'm still like, I don't know. I think it could be Jasna. I'm hoping it's Oradin. Someone mentioned Sigzil. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. He's the scholar type. But are we allowed to talk about secret projects here?
Yeah, anything that's published. Just don't talk about Isles of Emberdark.
Okay. Well, you know, the Sunlit Man, Sigzil's still around. Could be stuff there.
Yeah, I actually want to talk about two fan theories that I like both of them. When I say fan theory, I mean fans of this podcast theories. So we had Stendrax1 on YouTube. This was a really interesting comment, and I looked into it a bit more, but let me just read directly what their comment was. I'm going to place a stake in the epigraph author being Kaladin's mom, Hesina, perhaps known as Hesi of Hesi's Mythica. She sure was interested in the Unmade before, and the cleansing of Shinovar as it pertains to the Unmade could be very interesting to her as well. This is a double compound theory here, because not only is the theory that Hesina wrote the epigraph, which we didn't even consider, we considered Oradin, but not Hesina. She's very well educated. Definitely could be an author.
So she's like an educated, like Dark Eyes from Carbranth, right? Like she could absolutely be a scholar.
Yeah. Access to the Palinaeum and everything.
Right.
And then the name similarity to Hesi.
Mm-hmm.
We know Hesi was a contemporary of Jasna. So Hesi's Mythica, the Mythica epigraphs, for those who aren't familiar or don't remember, Mythica was written by Hesi and were the epigraphs in Oathbringer, I want to say, I don't remember, that talked about the Unmade, that just like described each of the Unmade and had theories about them. That was Oathbringer, wasn't it?
I think that's Words of Radiance. I think it's part was three it of Words of Radiance.
It could be. But either way, like, it mentions Yasna. So this is a contemporary author, lived at the same time as Yasna, wrote about the Unmade. So even if it's not Hesina, maybe it's Hesse writing these epigraphs, who's very much researching Spren and the Unmade and everything.
Is Hesse is Hesse part of Yasna's like secret group of scholars that powwow on Span Reads once a month?
If so, I don't think by name.
Right. I mean, most of them are anonymous anyway, because yeah. Like some of them are like men who secretly know how to write or whatever.
What if Hesina is one of them?
Like, yeah.
It would be interesting.
We really don't
there's
know.
There's so much. Yeah.
We really don't know much about Hesina. We've seen her as like a main character in three chapters, maybe like once in The Way of Kings and then twice in Rhythm of War. And I don't want to, like, obviously you could easily write it off as Hesina and Hesse are both named after the same person in lore, you know, like there's examples of that all over. But it is interesting that Hesse is alive or has been recently to write about Yasna in their works. That's interesting.
Yeah, it definitely adds a level of credibility and intrigue to that theory. I'm interested to find out if it's right.
Yeah, what if Hesina is just some secret scholar and we never realized because she's so humble, doesn't talk to Kaladin about it, wants to keep it secret, that adds her. Although I would change my name a bit more than removing some letters, but if, like you said, if it's a common name, like named after some historical figure, then yeah, you wouldn't necessarily connect Hesina to Hesse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other one was from our Discord, the Falling on Discord. Siegfried said, I haven't actually read the preview chapters, but when historian/philosopher was mentioned for who the writer might be, I first thought of Sigzil. So that's probably who you were talking about, Tim, as well.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
So just wanted to credit Siegfried for that one. I think Sigzil is very much a possibility here. Like, we know he's alive long after these events from Sunlit Man, so he could easily have written it at any time in between.
Something that adds credence to that as well is in the postscript of Sunlit Man, Brandon Sanderson talks about how he planted Sigzil a long time ago and it just has never really gotten to dig into him like he does in the Sunlit Man, and he's been wanting to bring him forward for a long time, and he's had like big plans for Sigzil. So for him to write like a notable historical text or be important moving forward, maybe come back to Roshar after whatever he's doing with the Night Brigade. Yeah, I think that has big possibilities. Yeah.
Should we move on?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Missing Shardblades.
Right. So this has always bothered me up until reading one sentence in these three chapters, which is, you know, even in Dalinar's vision, you see so many shard blades and plate. And then, you know, in just thinking about it, there were tons of radiance when the recreants happened. Where are all the shard blades? Where are all the shard blades? There are these wild theories about how maybe the Skybreakers collected them all, or there's a hidden cache somewhere that the Heralds created, or who knows? Or maybe they're just, you know, you just kind of lose them one at a time as you like accidentally put them through something and you can't retrieve it. But they're so valuable, right? You'd think they'd just be all over the place, but there's so few of them documented. So it seems the explanation is when they're forgot about, they fade away and they aren't in the physical realm anymore.
So I never lost sleep over this because when Dalinar goes into that Feverstone Keep vision, he specifically mentions just in front of me here, there's twice as many shard blades as known on Roshar. Where would all of these have gone? And I immediately wrote that off to, well, okay, there's a bunch of like royal families out there that are hiding their shard blades. Like there's a whole undocumented cache out there, like the Devar house. Like, we have a shard blade, but we're not going to reveal it. We're going to surprise any, you know, assassin that might come. And there's a whole cache of shard blades all around Roshar that are hidden. So up until this chapter, I never really gave it a second thought. That I just assumed that the shard blades were, you know, some people, you just had to know the right person to go find a shard blade, but I guess that's not true.
I think I heard that that theory about the Skybreakers having them. And so I was just assumed that the Skybreakers had a lot of them, and then, you know, something that can literally cut through stone, if you drop it the wrong way, you can't get it back. And then it's just covered over with creme.
How have I never thought of that before?
I mean, it's what happened with Adolin dropping it out.
Yeah, dropping Oathbringer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, that was my thought too. And, you know, the Skybreakers had enough shard blades that they gave one to Shallan's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly like just for nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they definitely have caches of shard blades, but I still don't think it's enough to account for all of them. So I don't know if this was an explanation that Sanderson always had, or if he's just throwing us a bone, like, hey, you know, this is why there are dead eyes that aren't linked to.
Do Skybreakers, can Skybreakers use dead eye blades?
They don't.
Right.
But
would they hear the screams like we hear in Words of Radiance?
I think they'd hear the screams, but they'd also know why it was screaming, so maybe it's not as disturbing. They seem to have support people who aren't actually Radiant, so the support people could easily, you know, just like Shallan's brother was not a Skybreaker yet, but he had joined the Skybreakers. They probably had a lot of people like that who are like potential future Skybreaker Radiants with bonds. But up until then, they'd be like, hey, here's some shard blade for you to use.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be responsible for touching them. They didn't seem to have the same problem with using them in the first place, right? Like Syl does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I bet part of that is because Nail never forgot, like, they never forgot the reason why everything happened. Like, they knew.
And they also didn't join in on it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Before we moved on to the next section, I did want to talk about Rashadian a little bit. So we get a little bit more information. One, I mean, it's awesome. There's a flying horse. It's really cool. But also, Shallan mentions that the Rashadian like glows a little bit and has an after image, and that immediately made me think of Zeth. And it, I know that there's more here, and something about they have more, like more of a, I don't have a way of describing it. Do you have any further thoughts from what we learned here?
I have something to add to your questions about Rashadium. I don't have any answers for you. The horses are not native to Roshar, correct?
Right.
Are Rashadium?
We assume so, because they've got more, like, they've got stone hooves.
Yeah, more stocky builds and stuff like that. Yeah,
and don't they have certain spren that follow them around?
They do.
The arrowhead spren?
I think they have glory spren follow them around. Do they not?
I don't remember the specific type.
Yeah, I don't remember that specifically. But I've always assumed that Rashadium are what happens when you mix a horse with either actually breed like a horse with local flora, a fauna. Which one's the animals anyway? Yeah, so you would mix a horse with local fauna in some way, you know, kind of how like the horn eaters are like half, you know, they have some you know, singer blood in them, whatever. So I think it's like horse plus some native Roshar stuff, which, you know, we know the native Roshar, especially the big great shells, like the big Roshar creatures, have Spren, have some sort of link to Spren. They have gem hearts. So maybe like Raishadium actually have a Spren kind of with them. And so that's why they'd look a little bit weird in the cognitive realm. So like when they enter the cognitive realm, there's the horse, but then there's also the Spren at this in the same location as the horse, overlapping. And then when the horse moves, the Spren kind of catches up. So there's kind of an after image. So like there's something, there's investiture involved with Raishadium, just like there's investiture involved with great shells. That's how I've kind of interpreted all this.
I wonder if Raishadium have a gem heart.
You would think they'd mention that. It's not like they've never butchered a Raishadium before.
Right. Yeah, they probably would mention that. You're right.
But I don't, maybe there isn't a gem heart required in order to have this link, this bond.
And actually, I think it's actually music Spren that follow Raishadium. I think so. There's that scene in Oathbringer, it's a flashback, where there's two armies. It's a Dalinar flashback. Dalinar's going up against another Alethi army. And then right before the battle, like a bunch of Raishadium like gallop through the battlefield. And I believe they have music Spren with them, not glory Spren. So interesting choice.
Yeah, I just pulled up the copper mind and it says it could be music Spren.
Yeah.
So yeah, copper mind kind of agrees with me that there's some kind of nail bond-ish thing happening between Raishadium and possibly music Spren. So I don't know, the fact that copper mind's on my side makes me feel good, but I hadn't actually read that before. But yeah, I mean, they're more intelligent than a normal animal, which also we know investiture kind of grants intelligence in certain ways. Mm-hmm. So their spirit web is invested. What might be some terminology one might use.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of investiture, that's a good segue into our next part with the Lightweaver abilities. David, you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, so we kind of, I don't know if we're learning or just sort of reinforcing. I think some of this is learning, some of this is reinforcing. So I wanted to talk about these one at a time and discuss them. The first thing is kind of the elephant in the room, which is solid illusions.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to start thinking about that. I know we saw some evidence of that at the Battle of Thalen Field, where the illusions that Shallan made were a little bit too solid. Most of them could not actually fight. Like they would stab with the sword and it would go right through. But she was saying, specifically she said in this chapter, that Radiant was solid. Her illusion of Radiant was solid. And Radiant was wearing shard plate at the time, by the way.
Right.
So there's a lot to that.
Yeah. So the very last line we get of this chapter is reality, Shallan hissed, is what I decided to be. And is that an oath? Did she just swear an ideal? I was a little lost here.
I don't think it's an ideal. Because she doesn't have ideals, she has truths. But I think what she's realizing how her powers work to a greater extent. Like she just was told by Kalak some really interesting stuff. And we know with magic systems, half the battle is knowing what it can do. Because if you don't know it can do that, then you don't have the intent that's needed.
Right.
Or the command that's needed or whatever it is, like to do it. You know, you see that in Warbreaker most specifically, right? If you know that you can do something with a breath, suddenly it's actually not that hard to do it. but you have to learn that it's possible and have the intent to do it and know the correct command word. So it feels like that with radiant powers a bit, where it's like, are you fumbling around figuring things out, in which case you're going to have really basic use, or have you been trained by someone, you know, who through generations and generations have figured this out, like Zeth, using the same abilities and knowing exactly what he can do with them. So
what happens here seemed to certainly take the fused by surprise. So back to our previous conversation, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, about how the powers of a certain radiant group could evolve or progress as they keep coming back. This isn't a really interesting one for Lightweavers here, because the fused is taken aback or maybe even killed by this illusion here, or I don't even know if illusion is the right word anymore, because the fused discards it as an illusion and then it stabs him. So it's a really interesting idea. And then, David, back to what you just said about Skybreakers, I wonder if, because the Skybreakers are so consistent, I wonder if their abilities never change. I wonder if they're more stable in what you can expect out of a Skybreaker versus a Lightweaver.
Yeah. I will point out that Kallak told her she could make her illusion solid. So this is knowledge that existed pre-Shallan. I don't know why a fused wouldn't know that was possible, unless, I mean, he was basically like playing with her, toying with her. Like, he didn't consider her to be a threat. And even in this battle previous to that, she was making illusions that were not solid. So maybe he was like, you're just trying the same exact trick again. I'm not going to fall for it. Like, you've just done this three times already of creating an illusion to distract me. I'm not going to get distracted this time. I'm going to keep stabbing you. But this time it was different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would interpret that and explain why, like, even if he knew they could be solid, he didn't expect this one to be solid.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It was epic.
Yeah, that's... I think the shard blade, though, that she was holding was a solid blade because it didn't slice his soul. He bled from it. Is this...
Yeah.
Okay, here's the question. Is this going to kill him?
I mean, depending where he gets stabbed, if it gets his gem heart, then he's just done, right?
He would be reborn, right? That's if he's still right. Do that. Or do they not?
Do you mean like he's just done?
Well, yeah, I don't mean dead. I just mean like, can he heal? Like, I don't remember. Did we ever really get a lot of point in the text used getting hurt in traditional ways and then healing from it or dying from it?
I think they only need to use their void light when they're healing, otherwise it stays with them indefinitely.
Does void light heal them?
I thought it did.
I don't think the pursuer heals his bodies. He discards them and reforms.
Because we only ever see radiance fighting the fused, and they use their shard blades, which
right. have
different effects. But
right.
I think this is trying to tell us that fused bodies can just be killed in traditional ways. Just stabby stab them.
Right.
It's just very hard to do that effectively. But yeah.
So the Copper Mine does say that the fused can use void light to be healed.
Okay.
I'm interested in what it cites there, but...
Rhythm of War, Chapter 5.
Okay, so it's in the books.
That would be the Battle of the Fourth Bridge.
Yeah, Kaladin fighting the Heavenly Ones.
So, like, why wouldn't he just heal from this and still be stabbing Shallan?
Right. I don't know.
So there might be more to this battle coming up, is all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Have we seen... I mean, we saw the fused pursue the ship in Rhythm of War, but have we fought fused in Shadesmar yet? Is this the first?
Well, Kaladin,
no.
Wasn't it Oathbringer?
End of Oathbringer.
End of Oathbringer.
When they're waiting for the bus. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're trying to convince the Oathgate Spren to let them through.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out Dalinar just had to do it.
Right.
Yeah, they were fighting Fuse there for sure. They weren't doing very well against the Fuse because they didn't have any Stormlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or he ran out of Stormlight or something like that.
The Fuse drops an interesting line that says that this whole time Shallan's like self-conscious about her lack of ability with beads in Shadesmar, like she can't manipulate beads. And then the Fuse is fighting her and says, we can't use, or the beads resist us. They hate us. And I'm like, what? What? They're from Roshar. Why would the beads in Shadesmar be repelled by Voidlight?
I bet it's...
Right. So he said... Let me pull up the exact line. The beads hate our light, but they obey when we hold it, same as with Stormlight. So he can command the beads using Voidlight, but the beads hate Voidlight. And I have the same question. Why do the beads hate Voidlight? Isn't Odium as much a part of Roshar? Like we learned that last book in Rhythm of War. Odium's just as much part of Roshar as Honor and Cultivation. So why would the beads like Stormlight but hate Voidlight? I can see the fact that they just like an investiture in general. So give them investiture and they'll obey. Maybe you could even use a otherworldly investiture to do it. But what does he mean by that the beads hate the light? I don't get it.
I don't get
why
it.
Why would
either.
They hate? I mean,
it makes me think of the mists, but the mists are like literally investiture.
So yeah, they're preservation's investiture, yeah, and it's ruins investiture. Makes sense.
Yeah, and it's like being repulsed.
I mean, the only thing I can think of contradicts what we learned in Rhythm of War, like you were just talking about, David, that Odium is not native to Roshar, but it's tenuous.
Well, let's think about it this way. The cognitive realm elsewhere don't have beads. So could this be an invention of Honor and or Cultivation working together and being like, we want our Shadesmar to have beads. And so they're kind of Honor and Cultivation, like part of their magic systems. Or is this Cultivation's magic system? Remember I said, I think Cultivation can control gem hearts. Like what if Cultivation's like, there are beads and they're mine. Right?
Maybe she just likes making friendship bracelets.
Mm-hmm. We finally got a size for the beads. I think this is the first time we've gotten like a real size for them.
Which is
interesting.
They're smaller than I thought. She said they were like small beads on a necklace. I was envisioning more like a marble, like a small marble size. Or about half that size, I think.
They're smaller than the their currency. Why am I forgetting the name of it?
Spheres.
They're smaller than the currency spheres, which are already smaller than I expected. Because I always think of them holding these giant like orbs. They're actually very small.
I went to Dragonsteel and they have this little they call it Hoyd's Museum. And you can walk through and they have a bunch of like fabricated replicas of stuff from all across different published things. And they have like some Stormlight spheres in the museum. And then there's a little sign that says, yes, we know this is canonically inaccurate. These are too big, but we liked how they looked. So we printed them larger.
Nice.
Do we want to talk about the other two Lightweaver abilities we learned about?
I do. I want to talk about identity especially, but why don't you get into manifesting first?
It was briefly mentioned. She's just like, yeah, a really experienced Lightweaver can manifest, not just command the beads, but manifest what the bead represents. I feel like that's kind of what Kelsier was doing.
With his campfire?
Yeah, with his campfire and other things, his rut sack. Like you can reach, you know, take the item from the physical realm and make it appear in the in Shadesmar. I think that's also like the water summoning Fabriel that they had in which one was that? Was that Rhythm of War or was that Oathbringer? I think it was Oathbringer. It doesn't matter. They had a fabule that it's like, how do they drink water, right? They had a fabule that kind of condensed water, which maybe was summoning it from the physical realm. I don't know.
I forgot about that. But yeah, it's like this big bowl on the ship.
Mm-hmm. We also have Windel, who's like a Shadesmar artist. Doesn't he like, I wonder if he manifests. Like, is that something Spren can just do? Like, is that a talent of cultivation Spren?
I think he does. I'd have to check the exact wording, though.
Unfortunately, with Windel, he has a lot to say and keeps getting interrupted by Lyft, and he never gets to say it. So
it's true.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about identity. Because clearly what Shallan did when... she was lashed by Drahi, right? And so normally she would not be able to absorb Drahi's lashing. Drahi would have to do that. It's linked to his identity. But Shallan's just like, be Drahi. And so it's not that she wiped her identity. She assumed someone else's identity. And that was good enough for the investiture that she could reabsorb it.
Which is really weird. It's almost like she lied to her investiture, and then it was like, okay, what?
Yeah,
that's an insane ability. And is that anything, something any Lightweaver can do, or is this a Shallan special again?
Yeah, is this Shallan because she's crazy and she can be whoever she wants?
Yeah, I think it's a Shallan special thing, whether it's having two bonds, possibly a herald for a mom, the mental health struggle she has, wherever it comes from, I think it's from her. But I bet this is how we get more investigation into connection and identity and what that really does.
I mean, we see what Scadrill's doing with messing with identity, and it's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So like Shallan's able to literally change her identity according to the laws of investiture, not just like, oh, I think I'm someone else. No, investiture also thinks you're someone else.
Yeah, she could use someone else's copper mines by doing this, right?
Any mental mind, yeah.
Yeah, she could just start tapping somebody else's investiture.
She'd be like, be wax, and then suddenly can tap wax's metal mines or whatever, be Wayne.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Nerf Lightweavers in the next patch, please.
And then Breath. She could be like, be Vasher and take all his breath.
Yeah.
Like, where does this end?
Could she also... Never mind. I'm going to leave that alone. Never mind.
Is it possible that she was able to do it because she knows Drahi really well? Like, or could she just do this to any random person?
Yeah, I wonder if she has a connection to the person to lie to her investiture.
Maybe it is a connection thing.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that.
Strong connection to someone, you can then assume their identity.
But then all you'd have to do is have a bondsmith and manipulate your connection, and then you could do it.
Yeah,
there's a lot that you can do with these magic systems that we are just like learning about, the tip of the iceberg, and I think that's really exciting.
Yeah,
and you know, I just got to throw in, it gives some more credence to Shallan being Lightsong.
It's true.
She just assumed the identity.
She is Lightsong. She just has to say it.
Yeah.
When I'll bring that up when Paul reads this chapter, that she could just lie to her investiture and be Lightsong.
Please do.
Anything else in the Shallan chapters?
Yes, I want to talk about her truths, because this is something that was discussed on Discord, and I think it's a really neat idea. So she says a truth in this chapter. She says, I'm afraid of everything. Terrified of the world, of what might happen to my family, most of all of myself. I always have been. In The Way of Kings, chapter 45, Shadesmar, she says, what am I? I'm terrified. And that allows her to soulcast in Shadesmar.
Yeah,
there was always discussion, is this her first truth?
Right.
I think, and that's not just me, this again came from Discord, but I fully agree. I think that she's retracing her truth steps, but this time with Testament. So that all of the truths she said to Pattern, she's going to say the same truths again, maybe with more detail or adjusted to her current state, to Testament. And she's going to end up being like fourth ideal Radiant with both Pattern and Testament.
I wonder if this is the same ideal she gave Testament when she was 8 or whatever.
It definitely could be. But I feel like when her mom and dad were alive, I don't think she was having the same family issues. Like, I don't think she had much to be scared of.
Sure.
Like, she kind of talks about this. She's like, truths came really easily. I was a carefree child.
Oh, that's true.
But then her mom tries to kill her, and that's when things turn a little dark.
Right.
Just a little.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
And she kills her own mom. So, like, from there, and that's when she just, like, breaks all her oaths with Testament. So I think she's speaking the Pattern oaths again with Testament, which are stronger oaths because they're not childhood oaths.
Sure.
Or truths. They call them truths, but I feel like it's interchangeable. So this is definitely a callback to that. And I think we're going to learn that, yeah, so she's like going to have to strengthen both Nail of Bonds. And maybe as she says these, maybe she's going to find that, like right after this chapter, maybe she'll find that Testament is a bit more aware. Strengthened.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, interesting.
The other thing I want to talk about is just in general, the attack on them. I saw some discussion about this as well. In the community, I think it was on Reddit this time, that was there an informant? Because how would the Heavenly Ones know where to intercept them? That, like, them heading to Azir is a bit like knowing that in the first place. They're in the middle of nowhere. Like, Strahlen's like, why would they fight us here? And they brought enough Heavenly Ones to counter the number of Radiants. So, like, it feels like there's an informant.
Hmm.
So would this just be spies, or would this be like someone like one of the Lightweavers on Shallan's team, or just someone they brought with them?
Or someone in Lasting Integrity that was hanging out like as they left or something.
Yeah. There's a lot of weird people in Lasting Integrity. So in general, probably informant. I could see Sanderson leaning into that.
Yeah.
No way it's Kalak, right?
That doesn't make sense to me, but he me is neither. Crazy.
I did see someone say Vatha.
Ooh. Well, does he have a motive to betray Shallan?
I don't know.
Maybe
I kind of rejected that myself, but I thought I'd bring it up because it's an interesting idea. Because there is specifically a conversation with Vatha, and Vatha's like, no, I'm happy to take the long route home.
Mm-hmm.
In general, it seems like the Fuse behavior has changed. My assumption is this is because of Taravangian holding ODM and giving them different directives.
That's a good point. I think also, though, Leshri betrayed them. And so, like, she was on one side of things. And so because she left, now the other side has the strong, like, leadership. And so it's less about honor and more about killing all of your enemies.
Ooh, was Leshri... So all of the behaviors we saw with the Heavenly Ones of them, like, treating battle honorably and all that, was that all coming from Leshri? And now that there's a schism in the Heavenly Ones, the ones that remain on Odium's side are not honorable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think it would have been all of them, but that's a good point.
Makes sense to me.
And sorry, I do have a list of things that I wanted to talk about in the Shallan's chapters, but I think this is the last thing. Abidi the Monarch. this is the heavenly one that attacks Shallan. He seems to be obsessed with Lightweavers and in general ruling over the Lightweavers. Here are two quotes. "Lightweaver, I hate your kind, always lying, always shadows. You never obey your betters." And then, "I am Abidi the monarch. I will rule this world and I shall keep the Lightweavers to bleed for me when..." And then he didn't get to... But, he seems kind of obsessed with the Lightweavers. He claims to not be insane, but obviously he is. Yeah, he... That seems to be a thing with the Fuse. They think they're not insane, but everyone else around them is.
Everyone else is the crazy ones, and they're the sane ones.
Yes, I'm the sane one because I'm able to stay sane by stabbing Radiance a lot and flashing their blood all over me, which is a very sane thing to do and keeps me sane. Yeah.
Keeps me sane. Right, exactly.
But like, I feel like there's more to this. Like you know how the Pursuer was absolutely obsessed with making sure that anyone who killed him, he went back and killed? Like, is this Abidi obsessed with Lightweavers? And is this going to be like Shallan's Pursuer through the whole book? Or is this a throwaway character who's going to die and we never see him again?
Yeah, he might already be dead. We don't even know.
I'm
curious if somehow her fabrication is about to like drain his void light and he's going to like die or something. I don't know.
I don't think we're going to get a repeat of the Pursuer. But we are going to get some kind of competition with trying to find Ba'ed Umishrim. It just seems like him being a heavenly one that doesn't fit nearly as well.
Yeah. I personally hope this is just the last time we see him. And it was like, this could potentially have been another Pursuer, but it's just like, Shallan's like, nah, I'm not having that. And I think that would be neat. But also, I could definitely see this being a recurring character through the whole book. Because Fuse like to come back. Mm-hmm. And then maybe he finally dies to Anti-Void Light.
Okay. Kaladin?
Kaladin.
The Rock. I want to talk about The Rock.
Okay.
So, Leighton packs his bag. And then he opens like this side pouch. And there's the flute. Horse, which Kaladin found at the end of last book, and a rock. And Leighton says, "Oh, I didn't put that in there. Let me grab that." And Kaladin says, "No. What's going on with the rock?"
Same thing.
We just heard about how Leighton is extremely precise and exact and so good at packing, and he fits everything in. And so Leighton's like, "I packed that, and I don't know where that rock came from." Like, there's shenanigans afoot.
Tiana's alive. Tiana's alive.
I do think it's a rock from Tien. I don't know if it means Tien's alive.
In all seriousness, I think something's going on with Tien in the spiritual realm. Because we just talked with Tien in the spiritual realm at the end of last book. So... this rock, we're going to be exploring the spiritual realm and the mechanics of it right now.
Okay. This is really out there with zero evidence, but there is cognitive shadows, which are shadows of people that continue to exist in the cognitive realm. Are there spiritual shadows?
I would say almost certainly, because Dalinar talks with Evie.
So as long as there's people around with connections to those who have passed, those connections are trying to find somewhere to connect to, and they end up in the spiritual realm and represent how people felt about those people who passed. Like that would be my theory. And so it's very similar to how cognitive shadows work, but would be existing in the spiritual realm and probably much more common. So maybe Tien is alive in that sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it kind of fits how with Kelsier being alive, the first cognitive shadow we learn about, makes it okay because he's not really alive. I'd be a little disappointed if Tien was like, "Oh, I've been here the whole time." But yeah. I could see that being a really interesting introduction to the mechanic with someone that we really care about.
This brings Honor Tanavast back on the table for me, Like, if there's spiritual shadows and somehow they're able to be preserved, like Kelsier is, in a similar mechanic of like a shard being there, if you could preserve a spiritual shadow. I don't know. I don't know. The mechanics are weird.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to explore and have explored the pretty common philosophical concept of the second death. Because I feel like we almost got some of that with the shard blades that we were just talking about, where they're forgotten about and they fade away. Like, there's your first death, which is when your physical body dies, and then there's the second death when you're forgotten. So,
and along with what we had last book of honor is not dead so long as he lives in the hearts of men.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ooh, that brings it together.
It really does. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I think that might be the theme of this book, even.
Dalinar is not dead so long as Kaladin's wearing his cloak.
And we, you might also explore the concept of dying because you've changed, right? Like, what if Dalinar loses the contest of champions and becomes Odium's champion to conquer the Cosmere? Like, Dalinar now has changed twice, right? There's the old Dalinar, there's the Dalinar we know now, and then there will be a future Dalinar who's a conqueror again. Like, has someone died if they've changed significantly enough that they're not recognizable anymore?
Just throwing this out there. You know how all the fused have titles? They have a name and then a title with it. Abidi the Monarch. If Dalinar becomes a fused, he is absolutely going to be known as the Blackthorn. The Blackthorn will return as his title, and Odium will call him the Blackthorn.
Oh yeah. That's epic. In a bad sort of way.
Why do I want to see that? Like, I want to see Dalinar just unchained, fused, immortal, Cosmere conqueror. Like,
that there are a lot of people that want that. I am not one of them. I would rather Dalinar die in the fight than live to be the villain.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely fair, and I'm so split. And like, what do I want for Dalinar, and what do I want to read?
Right.
Like, because that sounds really cool.
And I think there's going to be another level of like when Dalinar is the leader of the armies of Roshar, and it's them versus Discord on the other side. Who really are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Sure, in this series, Taravangian's the bad guy, but moving forward, is he?
You know what? I think Odium's first target is Autonomy's avatars.
Which, okay, we talked about this on the podcast of the last episode of The Lost Metal. At the end of The Lost Metal, Autonomy has a one-on-one conversation with Wax, like right before the Sandylange, and says something along the lines of, you put yourself to the limits so that whoever is the strongest emerges, or whatever. There's a sentiment in there. I'm misquoting this. Elliot brings up the Envisagers on Roshar, where they put themselves through death. They kill themselves in order to try to bring out their inner radiantness. And I was like, okay, what if the Envisagers are the seed that Autonomy planted, like Trellism was on Scadrial? So I wonder if the Envisagers are going to come back as an Autonomy versus Odium seed or something like that.
I could see it happening. I don't think they're going to come back, though. I think even if it was, I think they're done. I don't know. What do you think, David?
I think that it could be both, right? I think that the Invisitors could have originated from autonomy and completely failed because Roshar is so brutal. Already has three shards, doesn't need a fourth, except your Unity shard, Trevor. But
Unity is more than likely a Dawn shard, not an actual shard, just for the record.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that. I think Unity is a Dawn shard. I also think Survive is a Dawn shard, and I think Kelsier has it, but anyway.
The scene where Scar is tossing all of his recruits' spears out the window was really funny. It came completely out of left field for me. Like, why are we including this? This is so, like, it's funny. I enjoyed a lighthearted scene in the middle of like this attack on Shallan. It's very rather ridiculous.
I think this is our last chance to see the named members of Bridge 4 doing their thing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So he's just throwing like putting this is almost Scar's like last scene. I could see this being his last scene.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's gonna die or just not appear again, but he's there. He's in Urethiru. He's not gonna leave Urethiru because he's training future members of the Windrunners. So that's what he's doing for the rest of the book. You know, we have closure on Scar. We have closure on Leighton, right? I think that's what these scenes are for. Could be wrong. Maybe there's a metaphor going on there.
I think you're right there. You know, Kaladin is saying goodbye, and we're saying goodbye for at least most of this book. Like the last time we're talking about literally everyone that we can think of, except for our lovely Horneater friend. We don't know what's going on with him yet.
I think it's actually interesting. I agree with you that this is probably Bridge 4 as we know it's Swan Song, but I do like that Sanderson is taking people off the stage for Dalinar, like for the Contest of Champions. Kaladin's leaving. Adolin and Shallan are coming back, so maybe this is a moot point. But, you know, there's key characters that are being taken off stage, named Bridge 4 characters, et cetera, for, you know, a spotlight back on our main three characters. So,
yeah, I like that. That was one of my frustrations with the Wheel of Time. By the end, you had so many characters that out of a 1,000-page book, you spent a very small amount of page count with any one of those characters. So I'm definitely glad to see that. We're bringing it back in. We're focusing in on the storylines, bringing it back to the Way of Kings, where it was those three, really mainly Kaladin and Shallan, but really those three.
I think that's a really good point. I think this is a strategy from Sanderson to avoid the issue of, you know, this is book 5 of a very long series, lots of book there with a lot of characters. And, you know, every author should have a strategy for keeping the character count that's important and needs to be in the reader's head to a reasonable size. So like George R. R. Martin just kills him off, but Sanderson doesn't want to do that. He wants alternative ways to just make a character basically done, right? So yeah, I think that this could be evidence of like, we're just not going to see Scar and Leighton again, and they had their last chapters and it's fine. They said goodbye.
I'm curious if that's happening with Navani or not, because she had all of last book pretty much, and she's been mentioned several times already. She's not in our part one, like perspectives, like it was just Kaladin and Shallan, right? So I wonder, obviously we're going to get a little bit of Navani, but I really do wonder if Navani is done, like you said.
Maybe, but also it feels really important that she's a new bondsmith.
Right.
So I don't know. I think one thing I wanted to point out, we're still in day one.
Mm-hmm.
We were wondering how many chapters day one would be. I don't think I would have guessed 9 and then we're still going. Right. So like all of these events have happened in a very short, like one day. It almost feels like the TV show 24, where too much happens in one day. But I think this is evidence towards the whole book being days 1 through 10, but which I really don't want. I want to see the aftermath of the contest, but
if we keep going at this pace, we're at 100 chapters before, you know, the contest. So
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
And he's proving he can do a lot in a day, even with just two POVs. We could see day two, like day two, Kaladin's traveling with Zeth. Probably Shallan is returning to, Shallan and Adolin are returning to the physical realm after this battle. So I could see them not getting POVs in day two. And we focus on Dalinar and Navani and I don't know who else. Maybe it's just those two. But
Renarin.
Renarin, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think Navani is going to show up in more like side character type of ways where, you know, Syl says, oh, I need to go get my things. I bet that's something where she's getting something from Navani. She's been obsessed with Navani.
Yeah, what is Syl going to grab? I guess that's my last question that I have. What Syl, the chapter ends with Syl going to go get her things, and then she like smirks at him.
I didn't know. I mean, the only thing I can think of her having things is, didn't she start learning to read?
Yes, she did.
Rhythm of War. So maybe she has books. I don't know. Like, she's definitely doing a lot in the physical realm compared to any other Spren we've met.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 4 out of 4 episodes where we've brought this up, that Syl's going to go grab her things. Spren are not supposed to have things.
Right. Mm-hmm. You don't hear Pattern talking like that. Like, Pattern can pick locks, which is has always been interesting. But and then like Lift can climb Windle, things like that. So there are other things like that, but I feel like Syl's on the next level here. So I mean, we've talked about this before, but I think this is just reinforcing that maybe Syl is going to end up fully in the physical realm. A physical living, breathing being somehow.
Yeah, I wonder what Syl's relationship with the wind will be, if they know each other or if they are gonna interact at all. That's an interesting idea.
There was an interesting mention, which is Syl's like, why is it so easy for them to cross over? For me it was horrible. And then she was compliment, like, was it Layton tells her, like, well, you trailblazed it, right? You were the first to do it, and people are, you know, the other Spren are benefiting from your sacrifice, essentially. I don't remember exactly how we put it, but she seemed to like that response. But yeah, I mean, Syl lost so much in the transition, so did Pattern, that they lost so much knowledge that they would have had and been able to contribute. And I still think that's the case. Like, I still think Syl is relearning what she already knew.
Yeah, definitely. I think part of that was just the fact she knew there was someone out there, but didn't really know more than that, where, you know, the Spren that faded into the physical realm, they knew there were people there waiting, honorable, ready.
Yeah.
And they do it as a group, which apparently helps, and probably Navani being spawned to the sibling helps considerably because they'd be attracted to her. There's all sorts of additional factors.
Yeah. Though this first one that she mentions, and you've got a note on that, I think she wasn't part of the group. She went first.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like, if you pay attention to the name, is it Lucentia or Lucentia?
Yeah, I would think Lucentia.
Okay. So Lucentia has been following Dabit around. So Dabit is going to bond Lucentia, presumably. Lucentia is described by Syl as, she's an absolute bore, no fun at all. I didn't expect her to join us. But Lucentia was Shallan's guide in Rhythm of War. She's not mentioned a whole lot, but do you remember when... So first of all, she did help Shallan during the trial. But also, do you remember when Shulan falls out of the tree and pretends to be dying and puts on this whole act so that she can get Stormlight and like steal one of the Stormlight gems? Like Lucentia is the one she tricked into that. And in chapter 5, she even said, no other spren came. Lucentia, the spren who had been Shallan's guide since her arrival at Lasting Integrity, made no appearance. Shallan had hoped she would change her mind despite their occasional clashes. Turns out she didn't show up because she'd been the first to go into the
physical. She probably went right after the trial, which is interesting.
She's like, I'm just going. And then so on her own. And that's why she wasn't there, which I think is a really neat detail that it's easy to miss. Because you have to remember the name between books and then between chapters. But if you do, you go, oh, Lucentia, and you remember that. That's a really nice detail to remember. And also, I like the way Syl described her. It's
like, yeah.
It's like, maybe we agree with Syl. But
I wonder if these new Honor Spren are going to, or how soon they will learn about Fendorana and the permanent death of Fendorana. Because they're coming over without that knowledge, I assume.
That's very true. They're coming over not knowing there's permanent death now.
Right.
Which is a much, like, they're expecting that they could become Deadeyes, which is a thing that happens now. But what they're not expecting is that they could literally be destroyed by Anti-Light.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So here's a question. Has the Anti-Stormlight not gotten into the hands of the troops yet? It's just not been enough time to kind of get it out there.
Yeah, I assume it was 2 days ago that the Fused escaped with it, and a couple of them have it, but that's it.
Didn't we see L experimenting with it?
I believe so. I mean, that's how the Pursuer dies, is he gets deaded by anti-void light.
So they know how to make it.
Right.
And we're lucky the heavenly ones that went after Shallan didn't have it.
As far as we know yet.
Well,
I assume this attack is not going to be fatal that we've just read about. But, you know, it'd be crazy if Drei just straight up dies in this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anti-Light making it into Shadesmar would be pretty disastrous, I would think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do the beads react to Anti-Light? Do they explode?
Maybe.
Sounds cool.
How does that affect the physical realm?
I know.
Just pops.
Just fades away.
Your lamp just explodes for no reason.
Spontaneous combustion.
You take the sphere that represents the Kolinar Castle, inject it with anti-void light. Or anti-stormlight, and then suddenly there's no castle.
I love that.
I get the feeling we're not going to explore that in this book.
I mean, Shallan kind of did the same thing with the Wind's Pleasure. She just told it to pop and it popped.
Yeah.
And it's soul casting. Yeah, it's a form of soul casting. Instead of changing, it just disappears.
Alrighty. Anything else before we close for this week?
That's it for me.
Yeah, that's it for me as well. I'm really excited to continue reading and finding out what's next.
I think the action's not going to stop. Like, we're already getting battles. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be many, many, many battles, little mini skirmishes throughout the entire book. So, should be interesting to read.
I assume next week we're going to get a Kaladin, Shallan, Adolin reuniting at the Oath Gate, but maybe not yet. So let's reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Tim and David.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure.